This half hour being brought to you by the great people at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, lots and lots of snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and not every day. Six great flavors of slushies. And the pickle bar, led by my two personal favorites, the barrels and the dills, indeed second to none. And don't forget, not only stocking up for the weekend for the games, but Thanksgiving's next week. Go to Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. We bring in the outstanding, and I do mean outstanding, Mark Wogenrich. Mark, always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure, Steve. How are you?
Doing really well. So I want to get to the question you asked, because it's a big picture question. And I understand why James answered it the way he did, and I'm sure you do too. But you asked about, but here's the question. What has a Big Ten schedule, and it doesn't matter which one of the top four teams we're talking about here, what does that do to prepare a team should they be in the playoff? Right? And that, you know, obviously, if things continue the way they are, that question will get answered. But in your opinion, based on what you've seen, has the schedule of the teams that they've been playing, I don't mean just Penn State, but Ohio State, Indiana, Oregon, is this Big Ten schedule enough to prepare a team for a playoff, in your opinion?
I think it has been, maybe not as much as it has in the past, and the comparison. And obviously we're going to draw the comparison with the SEC, and that's
not
what I was trying to goad out of him, but I was trying to ask him that. Because he mentioned it after the game. That was one of the points that he mentioned after the game, that he tied the Big Ten and the SEC. He was basically asked about getting players out of that game, or, you know, being able to get starters out, rest them. And I think what he was getting at is you don't get a lot of chances in the Big Ten necessarily to do that. I mean, they played an incredibly good game last week against Washington, which still, you know, it's a pretty good team playing in a completely different conference, which their coach acknowledged, which Jed Fish acknowledged after the game. And to be able to do that, to be able to get a bunch of guys out, I think is a good thing. You kind of expected it at Purdue, especially with the way that game started. I mean, Penn just like put it to them quickly and really just gave themselves a great opportunity to play most of that second half. The guys, but it hasn't been the case. They have tested. I mean, these teams have tested them, and they've tested themselves through, you know, trips to, obviously, USC and
Wisconsin.
And Wisconsin, you know, Illinois, you know, was tough over stretches. It just seems like they've been able to do that. And, you know, if you look again, you look at a, you know, a team like Ohio State, it had its sober moments, like with Nebraska before coming to Beaver State. Obviously, that game was not easy for them. Indiana gets its test this week. So this is going to be the lead, and obviously the argument in 2 weeks about how many each conference gets, whether they're going to get four. Who could somebody scramble up to five if there's chaos? I can't see that. But I don't know necessarily that the SEC's invites are going to be any necessarily better prepared than the Big Ten's invites. Maybe, Alabama, obviously, is going to have a quality win, that sort of thing. Texas as a champ, Georgia, whether they get in as an invitee. But I think Penn State, Ohio State, Oregon would have a pretty good argument that they've had some square tests just like those teams.
Well, I see. What's interesting is that ESPN will drive the SEC narrative about how great the conference happens to be. And look, I think they're a great conference. I think they're a great conference. But like, for example, USC beat LSU. It's not, you know, it's not as if, like, you know, like, oh, they're so shocked Florida beat them. Well, USC beat them, too. I mean, so there have been, you know, Notre Dame beat Texas A&M at Texas A&M. So it's not as if there, it's been a perfect season for the SEC, Mark.
Oh, yeah, not at all. And they have been eating themselves a little bit. I mean,
sure,
obviously,
sure.
Vanderbilt, a couple of wins. Florida, takes you know, LSU pretty much out of contention. And you know, the other point is that, you know, and James has made, every Big Ten coach has made this point, if you're going to play nine conference games, that is going to guarantee you pretty much one better date.
Right.
Maybe, you know, some of the SEC teams now seem to be scheduling, you know, the marquee out of conference. They're still also playing FCS games, and they're playing them largely in November.
Right.
And you don't see that from the Big Ten. There's nobody playing this week or last week in the Big Ten playing that sort of game.
Right. And I'll give you an example. Mercer played Alabama this week as one of the games, and somebody said, "What?
Who's getting Massachusetts to after a coaching change?"
Georgia, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they've got them. And I'm trying to think. Tennessee's got one, too, where you sit back and go, okay, really? In fact, just for the fun of it, let's just take a look at this week's SEC schedule. You've got Georgia, UMass, UTEP against Tennessee. Wofford against South Carolina. Alabama already played Mercer, so that's done. So that, you know, so that one's off the rails. Murray State just played Kentucky. Monroe just played Auburn. This is this past week, along with Mercer against Alabama. New Mexico State played Texas A&M. Just remember, Mark, it just means more.
And that's what I was trying to gauge. I was trying to get more of an eval. I think I probably would have been better phrased, James Franklin, to say, hey, evaluate the Big Ten.
Right.
Now, what do you think? Because, you know, they're going to go to Minnesota on Saturday, which is, you know, Minnesota's tested them in the past. You know, the history of that game. They had what? I think they won four in a row, three or four in a row before losing on the road to Rutgers.
Yeah.
So, that this is not, you know, like a Minnesota game should not be considered, you know, just a guarantee game, and I don't think in any way. So that's where I was gauging it. Like, that's you know, that can be a reasonably good stretch of games that Penn State has played. I don't know the argument about their, we're all going to argue best win in 2 weeks, but as a compilation of wins, particularly if Penn State wins this week and goes 5-0 on the road this year with a win at West Virginia to start season two, that's a pretty compelling road schedule, I think, as well.
Well, I think there's something else to it, too. I think there's a series of good teams that Penn State's beaten. In other words, they won at West Virginia, they're a good team. They won at USC, you know, record whatever. Like, their games have been so close. They're a good team, actually. Okay? They won at Wisconsin. They're a good team. They beat Illinois. Well, they're a good team. All right? They've got Minnesota. If they were to win that, they're a good team. So they've been getting wins over good teams. All right? And you can only really argue that the only two teams that they've played to this point were, really? Would be Kent State and Purdue. That's a small percentage when you're just talking about two games.
Yeah. And that's where I was, you know, again, with the gauging of, you know, getting into the granular about good wins and that sort of thing. Everybody's going to, you're going to make the argument, alike with Texas as well. I think that's probably a fairly common one that people are going to make fairly soon if they run the table and or even if they lose, you know, to Texas A&M, that becomes an issue as well. I don't think the concept of beating, how many great wins can a team have because the schedule doesn't really allow for that? You don't just play a lot of great teams.
Right.
I think we know that Oregon's a great team. We don't necessarily know that Indiana's a great team. It's having a great season, but we don't know that it's a great team that, you know, it will have a chance to prove that, you know, Saturday against Ohio State. But Penn State's just, that's the way the schedule fell this year. Didn't play that. I think there was a presumption that was, you know, how close was the Penn State, the Penn State USC game to being a two top 10 team at that point in the year? Had USC been able to hold on against Minnesota, that sort of thing too. So I struggle with gauging teams just based on a record, or not just a ranking, rather, because your record says what your record is, but there are pieces of those in there that can say, hey, USC is better than its 5-5 record, and maybe Indiana's not as good as its 10-10 record. Right. I don't necessarily think we know all that yet.
Right. How intriguing, because of the 12-team playoff. Okay, the argument used to be, Mark, that college football had the most meaningful regular season because you only ended up with two at the end playing each other, or you had having four at the end in a playoff. Do you find this November more intriguing to cover because it's 12 teams as opposed to recent years?
Specifically regarding Penn State, yes, because they still have control of their future. They hadn't before. You know, outside of like 2016, they were really at the mercy. And then even in 2016, for the run of the playoff, they were at the mercy of a committee. But that loss had all but ended it. So the stakes obviously getting higher the stakes of single games maybe are not as high, but more games. I think we brought so many more games into play that a playoff is affected from noon until 1 a.m. I mean, I went to bed and BYU was playing, and that game wouldn't have mattered largely before. It does now. Right. So I think the fact that we've brought so much more inventory into the mattering category makes it a heck of a lot more entertaining to me.
Okay. When Jack Ham and I did the pregame show for Washington, and I had said in the postgame show for Ohio State, I said, after today, Penn State's in a 4-game playoff to make the playoff. Okay. And so I said, Jack, you're the one that lived it. I said, you ended up winning 4 Super Bowls on teams that won 4 Super Bowls. I said, how many of those were undefeated? And he said, none, only the 72 Dolphins. Have fans in college football, or maybe more specifically Penn State fans, started to understand that part of it? Or is the Ohio State thing too much sometimes for some people?
I think in the moment it's too much. It's that week. It's the days before and then the 3 or 4 days afterward. That's an acute point on the body for Penn State fans. I got that. I mean, for the week, maybe even another week after that. I think the Washington game served as that cleanse, putting it away. But, I mean, we heard what happened during introduction of the Washington, before the Washington game, that there were smattering of boots that came around. So that was still reaction to Ohio State, and I think they got rid of it after that. There's that understanding. So from what I gather now, from what I see now, there's I think there's great optimism again about the opportunity to get into the playoff, the even bigger opportunity to host a playoff game. That will subside that residue. That will subsume that residue from the Ohio State game. It just gets so acute in that moment because of that moment and the history. And I think it takes a little while for that to wash away. But I see a lot more optimism now about talking to fans, and people, somebody's, you know, showing me brackets, you know, like projected brackets and things like that, but they show paths. Now they're, you know, believing in paths to the quarterfinals, about trying to dictate who you're going to play when, and then how, you know, then who you can play in the second round, that sort of thing. So that has, I think that's taken over a little bit of that, or not or a little bit, I think it's taken over most of that, the residue from that Ohio State game.
Sometimes a quarterback can overshadow somebody else on offense is doing really well. And I neither one of these guys could care about this. But it feels like Tyler Warren is overshadowing in some ways what Drew has done to this point.
It really does. I was thinking that after the game. Is like, how do you overshadow a guy who completed 90% of his passes in a game? And really... You know, one of his two completions is a drop.
Yeah.
So, Drew, to me, it's phenomenal that he gets, like, I think even James Franklin kind of alluded to this today, that Drew is underrated, and he said, and I understand why, and the why is Tyler Warren. And yes. You know, Tyler Warren is their five tool. But without Drew just being able to manage all the components and the assets that he's got, Tyler, I don't think, doesn't have those opportunities. And two, the other thing is Drew just seems so open to it, and so it goes beyond accepting. Now, Drew is really open and loves being in that sort of offense. Like, he does, it's not even that he doesn't mind being sent out to play wide receiver on those, like, eight snaps a game when Bo and Tyler are, and, you know, taking the quarterback snaps. He seems to, like, revel in it. And, just at some point, I'm sure he's thinking, like, that play that we practiced where they actually throw to me is going to happen someday. Maybe it'll never will, but he probably even has that in the back of his mind. I think he's been a revelation this year. The thing that's helped, I think one of the things that's helped Tyler, too, and Bo and everybody else, their offense is the way he can not just run, but scramble run. I thought one of the better plays of that game was his 14-yard run.
Yes.
That was just kind of escaped the pocket, and he broke a high tackle. He broke a low tackle and a high tackle attack on the same play. And there's two guys going at him in different ways, and he breaks both of them and gets a first down. And that was just. Now, if you watch Drew Aller all year, you've seen hints of that sort of thing. He put everything together on that run. But I think if you haven't watched him, that would have surprised people. And if, you know, whoever's scouting him for the future, looking at that has to make you say, you know, how? How do we keep this guy from hurting us? How do we keep the other guy, obviously, but then he can do it too. So, you're right. It's just fascinating. His season with a 70% completion percentage and everything else he's done, and he's not the most popular player in his offense.
By the way, the Big Ten Offensive Player of the Week just announced Tyler Warren.
Of course.
Of course he was.
190-yard all-purpose yards. You know?
Yeah. Well, this is a team that they're facing this week that has 20 takeaways on the year. And I know that was addressed in the press conference, but – that's how opportunistic they have been to this point. In your experience of watching teams, when you're facing a team that has a reputation for being opportunistic, what has been the common approach to attacking a team like that?
Don't give them opportunities. And if you want a quarterback who doesn't give teams opportunities, I mean, I present you Drew Aller.
Yeah.
That was... I mean, the 25-2 number of last year, I think, got interpreted a lot of different ways. But this year, he has been opportunistic when he needs to be, but he also hasn't given teams too many opportunities to make, to really turn him out. I think he's probably got a handful of balls that he would want back. And other than that, many of them are even necessarily interceptions. They're going to have maybe a couple. But, I mean, just the last one against Ohio State, just an unbelievable. I found that just to be a phenomenal play.
It's just a great play. Yep.
By their corner against, Trey Wallace. Wallace beats him the play before. The corner beats him in the end zone. That, I don't know that there's even Drew said I could put the ball in a better place, but there's not a ton more that he could have done on that kind of coverage. And that's the thing to me that he just doesn't. I would like him to look maybe downfield a little more. I was surprised they didn't hit. At least maybe take some of those attempts against Purdue, just trying to, free him up a little bit. But he didn't, because I think when he sees stuff isn't there, I never felt like he's been that force kind of quarterback. But this year I feel like he's throwing receivers or pass catchers open a little bit more, but he's also never been the quarterback who is going to just force a situation. Maybe there's times he has to, but again, with a team with 16 interceptions, and which leads Big Ten in turnover margin, I don't think you want to give them any opportunities to get its crowd going, flip a script with its offense, and turn over a big play kind of thing, and your 7-0 lead is now tied, or it goes from 3-0 to 10-0, things like that. I don't think you necessarily want give them that opportunity.
Yeah, you'd be playing with fire.
I think he's a good quarterback who can manage those situations really well and not give away opportunities.
Mark, a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Me too. Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it.
Back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.